Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
To inform, inspire, and empower Alcoholics Anonymous sponsorship, locally and internationally, to be their very best, both personally and spiritually. This is the mission of RumRadio.org, an internet radio program dedicated to carrying the message of recovery to a world plagued by alcoholism and addiction. Alcoholism and addiction is the number one health issue in our world today, and RumRadio.org is actively participating in the solution. Interviews with a plethora of people sharing their experience, strength, and hope. Live Sundays at 9 p.m. Central Time and rewound again on Saturday and Monday. Tune in to 12-Stepology at its best on RumRadio.org.
Welcome and hello, this is Joseph G. with Rum Radio and RumRadio.org, the most comprehensive 12-step sponsorship in the known and the unknown universe. That's the spiritual universe, or the universe where people don't know what addiction looks like. He's such a nice fellow, why doesn't he just quit? She's such a lovely lady, you would think she would know better. Well, that's not the case, folks. We're not weak people trying to get strong or bad people trying to get good. We're sick people trying to get well, and this is what we're trying to accomplish by broadcasting RumRadio.org. We had a little good news yesterday. The Grapevine, which is the agreed-to publication for Alcoholics Anonymous, they've come up with a new printed book on sponsorship. It's called One-on-One Sponsorship. It's kind of exciting news for us. With 77 years that AA's been around, just had our birthday, and this is the first time that anything like this has come out. So we're real excited about that. We've been pushing sponsorship for about 4 years now as a mainstay of recovery, so this was really good news. I think what we have now is we have they've created a Macy's to my Gimbels, a Hertz Rent-A-Car, an Avis Rent-A-Car to my Hertz. It's kind of exciting. Things really move around well when there's other things, other like applications to choose from. It's just the way, it's a business way. I've been in business for years. Really works well with competition. Competition is the essence of a free enterprise system, which is the underpinnings of a democracy. Jefferson called it the great experiment. I'd like to acknowledge WNAH, Hoyt Carter and Tony the Horse, who affords us the opportunity to broadcast live to their listening audience in Nashville, parts of Kentucky and Alabama. They do this as a public service presentation. Thanks, guys. It helps. We would also like to acknowledge RecoveryToday.net magazine. It's one of the finer recovery journals, and they afford us some print space from time to time. I'd gratefully like to introduce my co-host, Harold B. He's a family intervention specialist, and he does a fine work with troubled families. And I personally believe the families are the basic unit of our society. And as the family goes, so does the nation, so does the country, so does the world. The families are being beset on all sides. Correct principles are not given to children. Children grow up like empty weeds. They learn from the mean streets. Most of the time, and how it goes into the prisons as well, and bringing the message. When you go into the prisons, the majority of the folks in the prisons, men and women, are there because of alcohol and drug addiction. It's an epidemic proportions. But we can do only what we can do, but it's a fine work. And he tries to get families together and try to glue them back sometimes. It's a really tough work. Sometimes it's a thankless job, but he does the best he can. And I really applaud Harold for doing that. Harold, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great, Joseph. Thank you for that nice introduction and the reminder about families. You know, this is a family illness, and it needs a family solution. Years ago, there used to be a lot more focus on families, and I'm not sure why it changed or how, but I'm really an advocate for getting back to working with family members, including them in everything. And in that regard, I encourage people who are new in recovery to introduce their sponsor to their family, get permission, of course, and but then what I've found most effective is where the sponsor sort of becomes part of extended family, and everyone can communicate, and there's no secrecy. A family is only as sick as its secrets. I'm dealing with several families right now. They're quite in a lot of distress because of secrets. So that's the way it was with my first few sponsors and my sponsor now. So that's what I'd like to advocate. And to our listeners, I just want to mention that Joseph does not make a penny on this website. In fact, it's cost him thousands to establish it and then keep it all up to date. He's done a great job with that. It's cost him a lot of money, and that's his way of giving back. Being on the air and going into the prisons is my way of giving back. And so we have a great program for you tonight. I have the chat room open, so let's have a great conversation, a great communication tonight in the name of healing and recovery. And so back to you, Joseph.
Thank you, Harold. Thank you for those kind words. Tonight, before we get started, I wanted to let you know we have a guest star. I like to think of a guest star, Anita Robles. She's a, I think what they call it, a chanteuse. Is that the term? She's a singer. And really, I listened to her. We're going to give you her website, how to connect with her. Phenomenal singer. Just great, very relaxing, very melodic, sweet music. Anita's going to tell us about what it was like, what happened, what it's like now. A lot of the times when we talk to people, they will show you what's able to accomplish once they get out of their mode of addiction and get a happy, joyous, and free life. Quite a few of the sponsees who start in, they can't imagine. If they were to wish for a life that they could have, they usually will not comprehend how much better it would be than they would even wish for at that point in time. They only ask for a very little bit, and once they get that program of Alcoholics Anonymous and get a happy, joyous, and free life, things really blossom, and that's part of the promises that we get from working all 12 steps. But before we get to you, Anita, I'd like to start the program with a third step prayer. When I get a new sponsee, and the way I do it, now that's not for everybody, but the way I do it is that I wait until someone gets a beginner's chip. It's a desire chip that's offered at the meetings, and it's an outward sign of an inward commitment to try our way of life for 24 hours. That means no drinking and no drugging for 24 hours. Can you do it? Are you willing to go that far? And if they say yes, they get their little disc. They get a little aluminum disc. And in NA, they get a keychain. I believe it's a white keychain. You know that this is the key to sobriety, key to recovery, the key to a happy, joyous, and free life. It's an outward sign of an inward commitment. And right after they do that, I grab my man. I believe men with men and women with women just works out better that way. It's easier to relate to the same gender. And sponsorship is a fairly intimate relationship between two people, which could be easily misconstrued. So that's why male and female together like that could get confusing as far as the gender. It's It's a simple program, but it's not easy. Why make another hurdle if you don't have to? So, but that reminds me, we're not AA. We're not NA. We're not CA. We're closer to Paranoids Anonymous. And if you can hang in with us long enough, you might even realize that there's a Narcoleptics Anonymous. We're rumradio.org. We don't aspire to be anything else other than what we are. We carry the message. We carry the message from the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous because the big book is the basic text and the template for all 12-step recovery. No matter what the 12-step recovery is, OA, NA, whatever it is, it comes from the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I believe going back to the source makes it a cleaner understanding for all people involved. So that's what we use to get the message out. And once I grab my sponsee, or prospect, I call him he's a prospect, which is someone who has the ability for a successful conclusion. It's a sales term also, and I have to qualify this prospect to see if he's sufficiently in a position to take on the information I'm going to give him and act on it. That's it. And I ask him, have you had enough? If he's had enough, he knows exactly what I mean. If he asks me, what do you mean? Have you had enough pain? Have you had enough sorrow? Have you had enough humiliation? Have you had enough alcohol? Yes or no? Yes. Now we could go forward. Are you willing to go to any length to achieve sobriety? Yes or no? Yes. I tell them you can get well from this disease of mind, body, and spirit, but there's certain things you have to do. And the first thing I carry around when I'm looking for a sponsee, the book tells me, go find a prospect and start working on them. Doesn't ask for you, for the person who walks in the room who doesn't know the jargon and doesn't know the culture and doesn't know what we do and how we do it or what a sponsor is. He doesn't know anything. All he knows is, unless it's a nudge from the judge where he's court-ordered, all he knows is he's in pain or she's in pain, and we might have an answer. That's all they know. So we come up, so someone who has gone through this and can share that information on a regular basis to help them attain and maintain sobriety is called a sponsor. And then you go up to the person and you have your little talk with them and see where they're at and what they want to do. And I cut to the chase pretty quick. Like I said, it's not for everyone. The big book is pretty explanatory how to do this, how to accomplish this end. And if they give me an affirmative, I have Clancy's 7 questions. You can find it on the website under the How to Find a Sponsee tab. Scroll down. It's in Word, and so you can do a cut and paste. And I carry these around. I believe that luck is nothing more than when preparation meets opportunity. So I have the opportunity because I was prepared. I hand them this, and I said, look, I have 7 questions I need you to answer. This is the first thing I need you to do. And I need these answered, and I need them back by tomorrow. Here's my number. I expect your call. That's it. We're pretty well done. So that was, I qualified the prospect. He's going to qualify himself. If he does the work, he's demonstrated to me, he's willing to go to any length, and he's been able to take simple instruction to go forward. Not everybody will answer those questions. And if they don't, that's fine. I move on to the next guy. But if I get them back the next day, we're off to the races. If I don't get him back, 2 things have occurred. He's either not ready or he's not ready for me. Not everybody connects with everybody. That's why AA is you can't really cookie cutter this thing. There's a lot of personalities that go on with this. So I didn't get it back, and I move on, and he moves on. I go to the next guy. Some people want what I have. Some people don't. They're not ready. Then I ask him to get a home group. That's a regular meeting place. It's like a family. And I want him to get 20 or 30 names, if possible, a newcomer's packet, or have the chairperson send out a list to the men for the men and the women for the women. This is their lifeline. And every day for the next 30 days, I want you to call one of those guys on the list, a different guy every day, and I want you to ask permission to recite the third-step prayer. It accomplishes several things. I always tell my sponsee what we're going to accomplish, what part of the steps, what I want this to transpire. We're adults. I think it's good to have this information. So the reason I have you do this, first of all, it gets you used to picking up the 500-pound telephone and asking for help. Two, it connects you up with your home group. This is your lifeline. You're not always going to be able to contact your sponsor, or you might be in a place where the craving comes or you need to talk to somebody. You have a list now. So they get to know his name and he gets to know their name. Thirdly, it's the third step prayer encapsulates what we're going to try to accomplish by working all 12 steps. It's also called the surrender prayer. It's time to surrender. We surrender to win, to get a happy, joyous, and free life, but first we must surrender. And fourthly, the person he's calling might have been thinking about picking up his first drink of alcohol, drug, or whatever the deal is, and chances are he will not. There's no guarantee, but your sponsee has already got a taste of being in service, which is we find to be the steps are the key, and service is the lock that gets us through this thing and into a happy, joyous, and free life. And this is the prayer. God, I offer myself to thee, to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help, of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. Can I get an amen on that?
Amen. Amen.
Thank you. Well, Anita, we have Anita Robles, the songbird. Is that right? Is it a chanteuse? Is that what they call it? When you're a singer, I know you've sang opera. I was listening to your music. Very impressive. So how are you doing tonight?
Thank you very much for having me, Joseph, and thank you for your introduction, and thank you for the prayer. You know, it's always great to just have a moment of prayer at any time of the day. You know, we need it all the time. So thank you for that. Thank you for having
me
tonight.
So we usually discuss what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now, and then your passion that keeps you in maximum service to God and your fellow. So tell me, what was it like? When did you first realize, or when did you first start drinking and drugging, and, you know, when was that realization come, or how did that all transpire?
Well, you know, my passion for music was always, you know, from very early age, and I was born in Argentina in South America, and I was always very curious about jazz and American music, but I had, you know, because of my family, they didn't want me to be in the music business because, you know, it is scary and continue to be scary. And so for them, they wanted me to be either a doctor or a lawyer. I went to law school for 4 years just to please them. But I just, you know, I wanted to be a performer always. And I always dream of going to United States and studying. But, you know, they said, well, if you're going to do music, do classical music. And it was a very good thing because I did a classical, ballet and classical theater and classical music and opera because that was okay with them. And in reality, it was a gift because, you know, I always tell my students when I teach singing or music in general, it's like go to the fountain, go to the real source, which is, classical music. And then, after I realized that I wanted to, you know, sing jazz, and I guess it was the free spirit or the rebellious spirit of an addict from, you know, the age of 13, 14, especially growing up in a Latin culture where there is a lot of alcohol and a lot of partying, and is all, you know, the family is celebrating everything, and so I think that I was I don't know what came first, the chicken or the egg, like we always say, but I think I had the addict gene, maybe because of a grandmother, or my parents were addicts or musicians, so it was hard, you know, for me to to just go up and try to express myself. So I started drinking, you know, at early age, the leftover drinks from the family parties, and I realized that I had the courage in that way to just do whatever I wanted to do, which was singing and writing, and I, you know, I did a little bit of performing arts and musicals and all of that, and then, you know, I went to the classical and all that, and I went to law school for 4 years. And at the same time, I was going to another university to do the opera and the classical training. So in the middle of all that, like I always say, you know, we drug addicts are very talented people in general because, you know, we have to have this facade, this double life, you know. And so my parents thought that I was going to be a lawyer and that I was this, you know, very well-behaved woman, and as soon as I turned the corner, I was, you know, going to get my pot and drinking with a jazz band that we had, a local jazz band over there, and I was already speaking and singing in English without really speaking the language that fluently. And I finally, you know, found a guy that, of course, was like a pot dealer, and he was a drummer in my band, and we started playing live, all of this hiding from my family. And then, you know, and then one of my guitar players decided to move to California and started recording in the Latin music business world here for, you know, big stars. And he said, why don't you come to Los Angeles and try it? And I always, you know, thought about going to New York and going to the jazz places where, you know, the big jazz artists became famous, and, you know, later on, of course, I knew that they were all drug addicts, starting with, you know, John Coltrane and Charlie Parker and Billie Holiday and all of the people that I liked when I was little, I didn't know. And, but anyways, went to New York, it was too cold, and, you know, came to Los Angeles, this is in 1992, and I decided to stay, and I lied to my family, to that boyfriend that was waiting for me over there, and I said, I'm going to stay here and try to pursue my music career. And went back a couple of times, went even and studied Brazilian music. I lived in Brazil, and at this point, my family is just letting me go. And I came back to L.A., and I started working. And I started recording and singing background vocals for, you know, some famous Latin stars here. And then I met a producer that was really into coke. And then I started that career of, you know, crack cocaine, and thank God for the Fellowship of Cocaine Anonymous, because that was the one that that I walked in for my first meeting, and I heard what I needed to hear. But, you know, my career went to the toilet with that, and it was 2 years of, you know, doing coke and went straight to smoking it with people in the industry, and then it was horrible. And I was with this producer, and we both lost our house and our place and our cars, and it was really quick. And then we heard about this this foundation that was kind of like a branch of the Grammys, the Recording Academy, and that was MAP, the MAP Fund, the Musicians Assistance Program Fund, and they had an event. And one famous guy that is in recovery, Eric C., you know, we know him, Eric, he doesn't mind, and great rock and roll star, you know, English guy that spoke for thousands of people at one music event, it was, you know, my introduction to that foundation, and then we went backstage, and me and my guy that ended marrying me because I needed my green card. Me and my husband, which was the producer guy, we both went to treatment, and the MAP Fund, which is now MAP Fund Cares, paid for us to go to rehab in 1995. And that's
what was your bottom, though? You had a bottom. What was the bottom? Do you remember the exact moment when you went? You know, usually we call it the jumping off place, where all of a sudden you get that realization that you can't continue doing the same thing, but you can't imagine not doing it. And at that moment, you know, you say, I got to do something.
Right.
You remember
yeah.
when
it
that was?
Yeah, it was, you know, in my bathroom. And after breaking up with my guy several times, he kicked me out. I'm in the bathroom doing coke one more time. And I had that realization. And I also knew that it was a way out, because I thought that to play music and to be creative, you needed to be crazy and you needed to be high. And, you know, that's why I mentioned this a special festival they had, because for me it was an eye-opener that it was, you know, thousands of musicians and artists that are in recovery, and they got sober. And there's very few exceptions. They're either sober or they're dead, unfortunately. And so it's the nature of being an artist and all that. So, but yeah, that moment came in 1994, and I was told to go to a meeting. And this somebody that knew me in the music business too said there's Cocaine Anonymous. You know, if you think that you're gonna hear something that it has to do with your addiction. And, you know, I always drink, of course, along with the coke, and I had pawned all my instruments, and the recording studio, we both were so bad, and so that moment came, yes. And when I walked into that meeting, they told me, well, Cocaine Anonymous has been around for 25 years. We use the basic text of Alcoholics Anonymous in our fellowship, and thank you for talking about AA and the Big Book, because it is really a textbook that we have to study, you know. Like I would say, the other Big Book is the Bible, and my Bible is the Big Book. And that is, you know, so important it was to me, that introduction. Although I thought people are lying, this is not possible, how can they quit? I will get 3 days clean, I went back out, and I didn't have a car, and I had to take a bicycle and go to the car dealer's house, and I just found myself in the same place, and all my dreams as a musician, as an artist, went down the toilet, and I just couldn't believe I was doing it one more time. So when I made that call to the MAP Foundation, they said, you got to come in tomorrow. And so I was ready. And I had this lady sponsor that has suggested me to go to treatment. And, you know, I am for rehab. I think that I couldn't do it just with meetings. And although, you know, it's a crazy business, the end of recovery now these days, but in that moment, 18 years ago, it was some few sober leavings, and it was some cool rehabs, and I'm grateful for it. I couldn't do it in the city close to the dealer that I knew. I couldn't do it just with the meeting. So when my head got clear, went to treatment for 3 months, and then went to sober living, great house in the west side here in Los Angeles called Felicity House. And then after that, I started playing. You know, I started playing gigs again, and it was weird. I had always two or three girls from my sober living there sitting with me, sitting in the restaurant or the club or whatever I was performing, and I knew then that this would be my sisters in my new life, you know, and this would be my family. And so, you know, through all these years after, you know, we went back with this guy, we were both sober, and then we got a divorce, and I moved to Florida. And, you know, through all the traveling and everything, I knew that Alcoholics Anonymous and sobriety was this new way of life. And I had put it first in my life, and it's been, you know, quite a journey. I was able to record music and write, and not only, you know, the Latin jazz or the style of music that I play for a long time, but to be able to write songs about recovery. I did a CD called 12 Steps to My Heart, and I did that when I returned from Miami to Los Angeles. And I have to say, L.A. has the best recovery in the world. I've been all over, and you know, it's just a miracle. I call it a miracle, the fact that, you know, I go to a new town, and the first thing I do is to find an AA meeting. And that's not me, you know, because it was the first time, the first thing I do is to, oh, well, where am I going to get high in a new town? Where is the band playing? Where are the musicians that are going to, you know, help me and give me some drugs or, you know, whatever? Where is the hot crowd? And now I go to the real people. I go to where the AA meeting is. You know, I call central office wherever I go, and that's where I go. And I don't know these people, but I walk into a meeting anywhere, and I'm home. And for that,
Anita, let me ask you this now. Your sponsor, Rum Radio, is really it started, and the foundation is sponsorship. And I believe that we've lost our way to some degree in sponsorship. You know, the big book says go find the prospect and start working on them. And what does that look like? And where is the information that we found to be the most productive? Originally, it was 50% got well and the other 25% soon thereafter. So that was really good numbers we had back when. And I think that could be we could do that again because we had the formula. Now, what did your did your sponsor came to you? Did you seek out your sponsor? And what did working your steps look like?
The first time I went back to that lady that I met in the first meeting, and she was from Brazil, and so we had some, you know, something in common about, you know, talking about the culture and everything, and we started talking just as friends, and I asked her, can you help me? And she said yes, and we started reading the 12 and 12 together. And then I went back out, and when I came back from treatment and sober living, she wasn't around, so I found another lady, which she is still my sponsor now, Carla S. She's one of the founders of Cocaine Anonymous, and she's been sober 27 years. And we did the first round of the steps with the 12 and 12 and just answering questions. And she had her way of doing it. Now, this woman sponsors at any time. In all these years I know her, you know, an average of 10 to 20 women all the time. And she had an sponsee meeting at her house. And so that was like, you know, once again, a new family. So I had the sober living girls that I have become very close with. And then I had all these women that I met in once a month with this woman. At her house, we got together and we just had a meeting and we talked. And then I met her another time just one-on-one, and we did steps. We did the four steps. She took notes, we burned it, and then I started working my 6 and 7. And all the prayers that we did from the third step prayer on our knees, you know, outside of a Denny's here
Let me ask you this. When you did 4 and 5, did you have a spiritual awakening or a spiritual experience? Did that come at that time, or was it a different – usually first – 1, 2, and 3, I believe you can do sitting at a traffic light, unless you're in New York City, because New York City traffic lights are made up of the annoyed nanosecond. But other than that, the 4th and 5th step is really critical. Most folks, in my experience, will gather some kind of spiritual impetus or strength from those two steps. The 12 and 12, as a matter of fact, says, until we've spoken with complete candor to someone and they've done the same with us, we still didn't belong. So what did your 4th and 5th step look like? Did you jump right into the 4, and how did the 5 work out for you?
It was a very long one. My first 4th step was very long and, written, like, I don't know, 40 pages. And I had to meet my sponsor, like, a couple of times to read it to her and did the 5th. I think the second time around, which was maybe like 3 years after, I think I did the columns, and that was more clear and more to the point. And both times, I remember just feeling like a grown up, you know, like finally a responsible person that was able to just have the right choices in life. Before, it was just feeling out of place. And so it was gradual for me. It wasn't just one 4-step. And it was I did with her, we have done about four times the steps around. So, you know, we did it one time at the beginning, and then I did it 3 years after that. And every time I had, like, you know, peeling the onion, like they say, another discovery. And I think it's critical. And I think also 8 and 9 are very critical as far as becoming responsible and becoming an adult And I think that's, you know, when, you know, the makers of the 12 and 12 and the psychologists and Dr. Thiebaud and all those people, which I got into that in a group of people that we call the primetime meetings here in Los Angeles. And they really studied Dr. Thiebaud and some of these other people that helped build, right, the 12 and 12. And that's, you know, going more in depth. And I don't mind it. I am, you know, I am a musician, but I also have a passion for healing. And this is some of the language that is used in that 12 and 12 is so applicable to many other addictions and human behavior that humanity, you know, can also benefit from reading a book like the 12 and 12. I think that's a masterpiece.
Some people don't like it in the program, believe it or not, and I'm always surprised about it. You know, they're big book thumpers. If it's not in the big book, it doesn't exist. It's just like, you know, it's like the some Christians are like that. If it's not in the Bible, it doesn't exist and all that. So I tell them, you know, the 12 and 12 validates the big book. It's the experience of using the basic text. But the basic text is the formula. There's a spiritual concept that in the mouth of the second witness, the matter shall be established. And I believe that 12 and 12 is the second witness that validates the big book. You know, it says, yeah, this is it. This is correct information, and this is a practical application of that information. So the big book also on page 164, remember it says, this book is only meant to be suggestive. We know so little. More shall be disclosed to both you and to us if your own house is in order. And see where religious people are right or wrong or someone else.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, so, yeah, these are statements of humility. So, look, we don't know it all. And we don't know exactly what's going to trigger you to get a happy, joyous, and free life. We don't know, but we know we have certain ideas. So if we keep it simple and you follow these, you know, in the preamble, you know, we say, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. There are those, too, who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. They're such unfortunates. They're not at fault. They seem to be blind that way. Some folks just don't understand that this is a simple program for complicated people. Now, in step six, six is we were entirely ready. So were you entirely ready when you got to step six?
Well, I pray, you know, to become ready. I think the seventh step prayer, six and seven kind of like they are together. I did it 1 year with that little book called Drop the Rock, I think it is. Yeah, which is an approved literature, I believe. But then mostly I did it like my sponsor had me do the tree of defects, and then pray every day for one defect and replace it. And that's when, you know, and now that I'm back in school and I want to, you know, get a bachelor in psychology, I know how these things work in the mind. It's like, yeah, we take alcohol and drugs, or we take the infantile ego and the bad behavior, and we got to replace it with something. And the big book and the 12 and 12, they give us the idea of, you know, replace defect with trying to do the right action and trying to do it with action and create a new habit of doing different things that we were used to. And so I think it's a process. It's all a process, and it's funny how, you know, I have a sponsor people, and my sponsor, when she has these sponsee meetings, we are supposed to bring our sponsees. So sometimes there is like two or three, even four generations. Sometimes her sponsor that has 30-something years comes, and so it's her and then Carla and then me, for instance, and then a few of my sponsees. So we have four generations of women that have been passing on the same message and it works. You know, I make this tree, I make this little artwork, and every branch is a defect, and then I replace it with an asset. And I write, you know, I write about it and I pray about it. And then most people start seeing the changes. Well, we don't see it ourselves, right? But people from outside start seeing the changes. So I don't know if I was completely ready, but I know that from the beginning, I was so afraid to lose this amazing gift that I did what she told me. Okay, do the tree and then, you know, do the seven-step prayer for, you know, every morning for a month while you're doing these actions towards the new you or the new assets or the good stuff that you're replacing the defects with. And, you know, don't worry, you won't be perfect, but little by little. And I did it, so I did it a couple of times. And I try to go, you know, deep as much as I can on this. And I know that if I do this, and, you know, some people don't have the time. Life gets good. You know, I put it in one of my songs. Life has been so good lately, I got to remember it's all because recovery. That's what the song says. And it's, you know, I see it in some of my sponsees. They get the great job. They get the great guy. They get married. They forget to go to meetings. There's no more time to work steps. And then they're gone. And so I am very aware that this disease is not going anywhere, and so I have to continue. The steps are, an organic process. It just changes, and you got to keep working on them and keep getting ready to change because, it's not anymore about drinking or using. It's about, you know, the crazy head that talks to us, and we believe it.
You know, step eight is really about willingness, right? And when I said step six, were you entirely ready? My understanding is no one is ever entirely ready. You can only be as ready at any given time as you can be. They're ideals. Only step one is ask to be done in perfection. That's no drinking and drugging, period. So we have to have that perfection. All the other steps are ideals. We strive to be the very best we can do. And you know what? That's good enough to get you going. Because like you said, you know, step 10 actually is steps 4 through 9, taking as a single package in the present. So 10 does a lot. Now, 8 and 9, how did you work 8? 9 is usually a real critical step also. And I think it needs to be, that's why I believe the steps need to be done fairly quickly. Because if you stall on 6, usually 6 is a turning point because 5 is you're less than halfway through, but you've made a conscious contact with your creator on 5. So now the heat's off. You're getting a life back. You're not drinking and drugging. You got a job. You got a wife. You got kids. You got the dog to feed. Recovery does not become an essential part of your life. I believe life is nothing more than a series of priorities and opportunities. Now, the priorities in recovery diminish. So once we get to 9, if we can get to 9 soon enough, now we have to go back and repair the damage we've done in the past. How did you do that? What did that look like?
It was, you know, it was very scary. I had to, you know, go by country because I have done damage, you know, back in Argentina and then in Brazil and then here and then in the East Coast. And it was, you know, sometimes with a letter, that's all I could do, or a phone call, or but I had paying debts, you know, with letters to the government, to the gas company. I mean, you name it, everything. I just followed direction. You know, I follow directions. Sometimes it's just the only thing I can do. What do I do now? And then I follow direction. Like, you know, this woman has been such a blessing in my life. You know, and all this time I made like 3 CDs, and she made 3 kids. And, you know, 18 years is a long time, and we are like just trudging the road together. So I did, you know, what she told me to do. The first amends were really scary. And then the second time around, I have created again new damage, so I had to do more amends. And but you know, I didn't, like you said, you know, I went through it and I didn't stay there too long. And I also understood that one way to make amends was not to repeat that behavior. So if all I could do was, because I either couldn't find a person or it was, you know, going to harm others, all I can do is just not to do that anymore. And just like, you know, when you get traffic tickets here in L.A. because we drive so much, you know, and then, you know, one time the cop was very clear. Okay, I'm going to let you go this time, but you never speed again, okay? And I'm like, well, I don't know if I'll be able to, but I'm going to try one day at a time to change my behavior. And that will be a way to make amends, just to, you know, to not say I'm sorry, but to amend my behavior. So,
I like that. Yeah, I like that. That's good.
Yeah, so it's been quite a road, you know, and it's progress, not perfection. We do what we can.
Yeah, I think a lot of people think that it has to be perfection. It's not. We're not about perfection, you know. Even we say that we are not saints. We believe in progress, not perfection. And I believe the spiritual progress is always been. It was in the beginning. It is now and shall ever be. You know, we never get to a perfect state. I think just the rule of growth is the rule of life. Spiritual as well as temporal is growth. You know, we're going to continue to grow. And I think that's a great deal. So now 10, 11, and 12, I like to call those the growth steps. You know,
yeah.
The big book tells us that our sobriety is contingent upon the maintenance of the daily spiritual condition. Now, I always ask folks, what maintains itself of itself? Nothing really. You're either growing spiritually or you're declining spiritually. And if you're declining spiritually, your recovery and then your sobriety becomes tentative. So how do you grow? How do you 10, 11, and 12? What does your growth look like?
Well, 10 is mostly just a quick inventory in my head at the end of the day. But I've done a profound study on meditation. I was a member of a movement, a spiritual movement that was based on meditation called Self-Realization Fellowship. And I also, you know, been a Christian for years. And so for me, step 11, and I used to have my own meeting where I had, I performed, I played music, and I did guided meditation. And then it was, you know, here in L.A. we have yoga meetings, meditation meetings, and there are more and more of those. So when you have half an hour of regular yoga, then you meditate, and then open up for participation. And these are meetings that are listed. They're official AA meetings. And so I am, you know, very thrilled with those. I really like those. I don't have my own meeting anymore because I don't have time. But I, you know, I wake up and I pray and I meditate for, you know, half an hour and read my books. And I cannot function without doing that. I don't care if I am in China or, you know, if the sky is falling. My day has to start with prayer meditation. Otherwise, I can't do it. Then sometimes when there's an emergency or I have to just get out of bed and run, then I have to find a time to do it before the day is over, because I just, you know, I'm grateful for these habits, these patterns that I got into when I was in treatment and in sober living, where we used to get up and do it all around the table. And it's just, you know, if not, I think my head is just spinning. I need to do that. So, and step 12, I got it, you know, very quickly when I got my first sponsee, and I felt that it's almost indescribable when you're there for someone. And you pick up this girl, and I was lucky enough to have a car, but she didn't have a car, so I pick her up. And I, you know, many times I said, well, I'm going to put my last $20 here of gas to go pick up this girl and take her to a meeting. And while I mean, and I'm not saying I do help other people because of this, but it's just funny how not only I had a wonderful feeling to be helping someone, to have a purpose in life, but to be, you know, passing on what my sponsor, what my sponsor had taught me. But I also got, like, crazy results. Like, you know, after I drop her off, I get a phone call and I get a gig, you know, and I get work and I get things happening and my life starts improving. And so my sponsor keeps telling me, when I don't know what to do, just go help a newcomer. And it's not only I'm assuring my recovery, I'm assuring my sobriety, but I know my life will be taken care of by my Creator, who is the one that knows what to do, not me. Usually my own decisions about my own life are kind of weird. So I always have to call my sponsor and pray, because I don't trust my own head. It doesn't matter how many years we've been around. It's easier, you know, with time. But what I'm saying is, by helping others, we get an amazing life. And it's not only about the material or the jobs. It's about just that sense of duty that we have in Alcoholics Anonymous. And unfortunately, most people don't get it. They say, you know, 10% of the people do 90% of the work. The service, you know, the cleaning up, the making the coffee, the getting there early to bring the cake. And Los Angeles has an amazing system of commitment in meetings, which I haven't seen in other places. And, you know, there is about 10 commitments for a meeting. So if everybody shows up, there's 10 people in the meeting. Everybody has a role. Everybody has a job. You bring the cake. You bring the coffee. You're the greeter. You bring the books. And, you know, you are the leader, and you find a speaker, and, you know, you got a meeting. There's nobody, you know, if they have the sense of duty. They start showing up because that's what they've been told. And many times, you know, when I was new and I was scared about my music or whatever, and I had a commitment at a meeting, I said, oh, shoot, man, I would like to just do something crazy, but tomorrow morning I have a commitment, and I have to bring a book to the meeting, damn it. So that kept me sober one more night. That also kept me in the sense of learning how to have discipline and have to know that, you know, if I'm doing my job in A, God will do his job in my life. And I know that to my core. I try to transmit it sometimes, and some people don't get it. And so that's what it's for me, you know, 11 and 12. Yeah. And, yeah.
You know, sometimes I'd like to say it's 20-80. That's usually the Murphy's Law, that 20% of the people are doing 80% of the work.
Yeah,
sometimes,
yeah,
I think it's even less than that, though, you know, in AA. We have a tendency, I coined the phrase restus laurelitis. You know, we're resting on our laurels, and we chat in the meetings, and we pontificate, and we teach, and we tell people how it all works, but we don't really not doing much. You know, we're sitting there getting the program through osmosis. You know, like all of a sudden,
right,
we're just sitting in the meeting, and we let everybody else row the boat. So I tell, especially in sponsorship, I tell folks this. When we're in the service of our fellow beings, are we not in the service of our God? And when we're in that service and in that moment, are we not divorced from self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity? And in that service and in that moment, is that not when we make our conscious contact with our Creator, who lives from moment to moment, eternity to eternity, life everlasting? The magic words in AA is action and more action, for faith without works is dead. So how do you know you sponsor now, right, Anita? You're a sponsor?
Oh, I've been sponsoring from, you know, the beginning. After I got 6 months of sobriety, I've been sponsoring people. And some of the girls are still around. Some of them are not. And I sponsored in Florida. I sponsored in Argentina when I go visit my mother. She's been sick for the last few years, so I get to travel and go there, and I have a home group there. And and I keep in touch, and sometimes they move on into someone else, but they still call me, and they check in, which is great. And so, you know, I've been a full-time student for the last 2 years, and doing my music. Sometimes I don't have the time that it takes, but I do. I do know that I cannot say no to an AA request, and I have people asking me to sponsor them, and I'm there. I'm there. It's just, it takes a lot of, you know, commitment and time, and sometimes the driving here in L.A. is crazy, but I also learned that I don't have to, you know, follow them around. I have to let them come to me. If they really want it, you know, are you willing to go to any length? And so with that said, I had to go to Al-Anon and become a grateful member of that fellowship. And it's great. I have a sponsor in Al-Anon, and I have an sponsee in Al-Anon. I've been a member for 3 years, working steps in that fellowship as well. And so, yeah, I have a full schedule. Between the musicians meeting, I continue doing service to the MAP Fund and the Music Cares, and my AA meetings, my Cocaine Anonymous, and my Al-Anon, I get a full schedule of recovery, 12 steps, and God, and I have that life, and I wouldn't change it for anything, you know? So
I tell my sponsees, if you really want to be an effective AA sponsor, go to Al-Anon. You're going to be dealing with a lot of drunks. I believe Al-Anon is postgraduate AA. You know,
yeah.
Most people are not going to pick up the drugs and alcohol after a certain period of time. I know it's a one day at a time, but there's some folks, it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen with me. I'm real confident about that. There's nothing on heaven and earth that could make me pick up a drink or a drug. But I still have character defects, and social interaction is always a challenge no matter how long you're in the program. And I think Al-Anon has a lot to do with interacting with family that you burnt out from your escapades, and friends that you burnt out.
Oh,
and
yeah.
People, and how you interact with people today. Harold, you there, Harold, or did we lose him?
I'm sorry, I couldn't understand what you said last.
No, I was trying to get on, see if Harold was still on board. Yeah, Harold, you're there. Aren't you there? I guess he can't hear me for some reason. He might have walked away from the phone. He usually says, you know, we have a plaque in some of the in the rooms, and one would have been taken off, and he was upset about any time, anywhere, someone reaches out, I'm responsible. That I'm there to help them. For this, I'm responsible. And then once you take that on as responsibility, it makes a big difference. Bill W. said, we don't have to make AA our life. We get a life from AA. I've missed that part. Some folks make it. Right now, this is my life, is working for the betterment of AA, Rum Radio, and sponsorship, which I really believe is the key. But you could see now, tell us about your music now. I mean, I loved your voices. You just got the voice of an angel. I don't know if any, I'm sure some people have.
Oh, thank you so much. Well, I had the first project I did was original songs in English and Spanish, and then I did a Latin jazz album with great players, recorded in Argentina, and then a little bit in Miami and a little bit here, and then I did a CD about recovery. That was the one that I said is called 12 Steps to My Heart, and recently I, with my studies of music healing and music therapy, I did a CD of meditation, just more calming music. And so it's like, you know, very meditative music, not songs or something like that. But, yeah, it's been a great journey. I get to perform here in L.A. with some amazing musicians, and some of them are in the program, so that's, like, awesome. And my website is Anna Rob. Well, I go by Anna and Anita, both. It's a long story, but Anna Robles, AnnaRobles.com, or Anita Robles, AnnitaRobles.com. So if you go to my website, you will see that I have 4 CDs. I have a few other CDs that I did with other people, but those are my creation, and they're different styles, and you can either email me or donate in the PayPal button there and email me, and I will mail you any of those CDs. And for people in the program, I really recommend the recovery CD. because it has songs that I have written specifically for the program. I was so grateful when I came back to L.A. That I figured that I needed to write songs, and they're called, you know, First Things First and Acceptance is the Answer, Came to Believe. It's all in a spiritual message based on the 12 steps. So if anybody wants to go to the website.
I want one.
Yes, of course, I will send you one, yes.
No, I'll buy a man is worthy of his labor. I prefer to buy it, but thank you. I try to keep everything on a spiritual basis. You put an effort in, and I acknowledge that by buying it. Yeah, but thank you for the offer,
okay.
Though.
Well, thank you so much. Well, we can talk after the program, and I will say if anybody's listening, they want to just go to the website. My email address is there, my phone number, and I'd be glad to share, you know, my story and my music with people. And I just, I know that without AA and without the program, I wouldn't be able to be creative and to be able to play music. So I'm very grateful, and thank you for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. Now, you said that some of the music was meditative, it was healing. You mean
yes,
healing like psychologically, healing medically? How do you mean healing?
I wrote a little book that goes with it. It basically applies, you know, the breathing and the things about meditation that are common to transcendental meditation or any other practice that quiets the mind. And so this is a new thing that I'm doing that goes with my studies and what I do. I do workshops once in a while. I, you know, just go to the world. And it's great because I get to spread the message in some way of recovery in the real world out there. Because people ask me, well, where do you learn how to meditate? And when you sing and your voice is so peaceful and so... How do you learn? Well, let me tell you, I had to get sober in AA, and that's where I got my spirituality from. So in a way, I am, you know, telling the regular people and the world out there that, you know, why did I start this journey? And but I love my, you know, my Latin jazz, my Brazilian jazz as well. So I figured that I could do all the styles that I'm good at and make people happy with them.
That's great. That was a great story. I'm very inspiring, Anita, and you've really come through the other side, helping people, you know, your music, giving back. That's the whole key to this, is being service to our fellow beings. You know, service is the key to this thing. I believe service to be a spiritual concept, and most, if not all, spiritual concepts have a duality or plurality to them. And I believe that, or polarity, and I believe that is in service's graciousness, allowing someone else to help you. And both people are edified that way. But coming into AA, coming into NA, coming into CA, part between me and you, I'm not a big proponent of singleness of purpose. I don't think it holds much water. Actually, alcohol with the Volstead Act was an illegal substance back in the day. So I believe drugs and alcohol are hand in glove. The kids are coming in today because mostly of drugs. They do alcohol too. They do whatever they can get their hands on, bath salts, whatever it is to get high, they're coming in with that. To tell someone they don't belong somewhere because of addiction is ludicrous, and it's a crime, I believe. We stand a united front against addiction. This is what we're about. We're here to help the next sufferer. That's our primary purpose. That's our only purpose. That's it. That's the whole organization of all the groups, all the 12-step organization. That's our only purpose, is to help the next sufferer. I believe the traditions, all the traditions need to answer one question. Does it divert us from our primary purpose, or to help us to accomplish it? That's the question. Anita, thank you so much. It has been very, very enlightening to me. Love your recovery. You got a great story.
Thank you so much, and I hope that once you get the CD, we talk later, and you can play one of my songs in your program. That'd be great.
Oh, yeah, I'd like to do that. Sure, I could do that. Yeah, absolutely, no doubt about it. I was really quite mesmerized when I was listening to your promo on your website. I was just taken back. It was very relaxing, and it just like ethereal. Is that a good word?
Thank
ethereal.
Thank you so much.
Otherworldly.
Yeah, thank you for what you do. It's awesome. Thank you so much, and say hi to the folks in Texas, and have a great summer.
Thank you. You too. And in closing, I think bye. In closing, I think I don't know what happened to Harold. I hope he's okay. The phone's open. Harold, you're there. You're not there, Harold, are you? Nope. Well, in closing, I would tell you this: Rum Radio is in 151 foreign countries, including Mississippi, 2,800 towns, cities, and villages, and over 300,000 hits to the website. Those numbers have changed fairly drastically. I haven't been keeping up with it. I believe those numbers speak for themselves. It's a good work. There's no money being made. I just had something come in. Somebody accused me of having a Rolls, making tons of money, and that I had a Rolls Royce. I responded, no, I have a 2004 Kia Monte, but I do have a two-car garage if you got another Rolls that you're not using. We do this for the love of the program and because God's given it to me to give to you. That's it. I like to think that Rum Radio is a collaboration between 101% collaboration between me and God. God did 101%, and I showed up. So remember, let's see, who's that? Let's see. I think Harold.
Hi.
Oh, well, we're closing. you showed that you were still on, but we're closing. So did you have any last words?
Well, it sounded to me like you dropped off. I thought I was on, so I read from your website on sponsorship. So we'll have to find out later if you were still on or if I was still on.
I don't know. That was curious. Well, the guest was still on. She was talking.
Uh-huh. Well, and you could hear her, but I couldn't hear either of you. So I wasn't sure whether
she was responding to my inquiries.
Say again?
Yeah, she was responding to my questions.
Well, yeah, you could hear her, but I couldn't hear either of you, so we'll have to see in the archive
how that worked out.
Anyway,
okay.
I had a great reading the sponsorship drop-down on rumradio.org, and everybody, it's a great website. Go there. When a new person shows up, go grab them and tell them you're their sponsor. That's what I do, and that's really what will keep this program strong and healthy. Thank you, Joseph.
Thank you, Harold. And remember, we'll see you on the radio, rumradio.org. Good night.